Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Bayer, and this is my brother, Jonah.
We're two siblings who love to talk about our childhood and nostalgia and how it shaped us into the people we are today.
Who are very into the wilderness, if I do say so myself.
Welcome to How Did We Get Weird.
So, Jonah, I was thinking about, I guess 2 weeks ago, kind of a more recent story, when I kind of gave you an ultimate posting dare on Twitter. Do you want to elaborate?
Sure. Yeah. So me and my wife, Vicky, were out in LA and we're hanging out. We're doing some podcasts, in-person podcasts, which everyone will hear more about later. But we were spending some time together, catching up, and we went to get lunch. And I don't know how this happened, but you dared me $20 to take a photo of this sandwich that was like, I'd already eaten half of it. So it wasn't looking so great.
Well, let's specify. It was a turkey club sandwich, right?
Yeah, turkey club sandwich. But it was like a $24 turkey club sandwich. So it was
a really nice sandwich. Yeah.
A really expensive sandwich.
And I basically said, Jonah, you'd only eaten half of it. I said, what if you took a picture of the leftover half of sandwich and you posted it and you said a glow up on a classic turkey club sandwich. And then you wrote
hashtag glow up. Yeah. So this is not really what the type of stuff that I post. I don't really use terms like this. I don't really post food. I feel like it's like very out of character.
Right. And that's kind of was part of the dare, but also because on this podcast, you very recently, or at least within the last year, learned what glow up means.
Yep.
And it feels like whenever CEOs or, you know, big corporations use the term glow up in their marketing, it really kind of ignites something in you and makes you really mad. I thought it would be funny if you kind of made a very, for lack of a better word, basic post where you said a glow up on a classic turkey club, hashtag glow up. And you posted it. And what do you think? I said you weren't allowed to say it was a joke. You had to leave it.
Right. I was supposed to get $20.
And you were going to get an additional $5 if you
if I posted added, some sorry hashtag sorry not sorry and I couldn't
yeah,
do it. I couldn't
if
do
you
it.
Did an if you did a comment on the yeah, post and said hashtag sorry not sorry.
I had to have some dignity left. You know what? I have to be honest. It's basically I feel like people saw it and just completely ignored it or tuned it out or like this is it was basically just not a lot of people interacted with it. I think people don't like seeing that, and it was like a really bad photo, but it seemed...
I thought it was a cool photo. I thought because okay. of your phone's camera, it was actually kind
I think
of a cool
people
photo.
Probably thought it was serious because people post a lot of that kind of stuff on the internet. So I think people were like, I don't know what people thought.
I thought it was interesting that no one really made any comments about it. Like that nobody wrote like, Jonah, this is so weird that you said that. And in fact, one or two of your friends like just liked it as
yeah,
if
people
you
are
were
nice.
Just
yeah.
really showing off your sandwich.
Yeah.
To me, I now wonder if anyone listening to the podcast will see your tweet and it will kind of hit them a different way now that they know it was you were dared to post it. But look, it's been up there for a little while now and no one's really making a big deal about it.
I think people have a lot going on, you know, to get this obscure joke that is probably not funny to most people. You know, they probably just moved on with their lives, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
But yeah, but I haven't taken it down. It's still there. If you want to see what my sandwich looked like, you can check it out. You can like it. It could still go viral. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's pretty incredible that you took me up on that dare and I don't even think I've given you the $20 yet.
Yeah. So you can, you know, my Venmo name. So you can just yeah. maybe after the yeah. podcast, you can just
yeah.
Venmo it over. Vanessa, do you want to introduce today's guest?
I would love to. Our guest today is a singer-songwriter who you might know from the band Something Corporate or Jack's Mannequin. Or you might know him from his current act, Andrew McMahon in the Wilderness, whose fourth album, Tilt at the Wind No More, comes out on March 31st. He's also the founder of the Dear Jack Foundation and the author of the memoir, Three Pianos. Let's give it up for Andrew McMahon.
Hello.
Wow. Good job. Really good. Andrew,
Thank
how's
you.
It going?
It's going good. I was dying laughing through that sandwich story. I wanted to talk, but I realized that it probably wasn't my time to speak, but I was enjoying it.
I saw you laughing and that made me feel good because I was thinking like, this is just not going to be funny to anyone. I mean, there is a lot of that stuff on the internet, right, Andrew? There's a lot of bad sandwich photos.
Well, yeah, but I like the glow up. I would be similarly disgusted and I appreciated the dare because I could see myself getting dared into a similar situation.
Yeah. I was almost offended that no one called me out. I was like, do people think this is sort of how I am?
I know. That's kind of how I felt. I was like, why aren't any of Jonah's friends seeing there's a problem here and and wanting to like come to his
I think there was just a level. I think there might just be a higher level of acceptance of that than maybe even we realize, you know,
yeah.
like your friends are like, maybe a glow up's okay.
Right.
Well, the other thing is I've started lightly trolling Jonah on Twitter and sometimes I'll find his posts and I'll make fun of them. And I will say sometimes, Jonah, you post in such a way and sometimes I'm not on Twitter as much or I don't see it, but sometimes you post in such a way that I act like you're asking for people to kind of, and by people, I mean me, to kind of make fun of it. Like you'll be like, you know, doing a lot of puns and kind of like stuff that I love that you do that. I think it's funny. I think it's endearing, but I also think like, Jonah, get real.
No, it's nice. It's nice when you have like a sister who's a comedian who has way more followers than you and you try to post a joke and then you get like, oh, wow, looks like my brother's a comedian now. Or something totally condescending.
The most condescending the most condescending way I like to troll you is by mentioning the subject that you're sort of making fun of or doing a pun about and then saying like, oh wow, my brother is like talking about this subject now. Like just sort of the most condescending, like
yeah.
really, oh, now he thinks he knows about animals, you know? Oh, now right, he's found a way to make fun of nature. That's really
right,
unique,
right.
Jonah.
Now Jonah's an expert on blank is a very common.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
I mean, I think my sister would like to harass me similarly on on social media, but I think she holds her tongue.
Yeah.
Well, I hope she listens to this because I will tell her directly if she does.
She will.
She's hearing this.
It's mostly supportive, but I'll get it. I'll get it offline for
that
sure.
That must be really nice, Andrew.
It is a blast. It is so much fun because also I think like Jonah, he's a cool guy and he can handle it, you know, but it's fun to just go on there and just absolutely razz him.
That's wonderful. That's good. Clearly, you guys have a great relationship. I can tell.
Well, it seems like on paper, you and your sister have a better relationship.
We do it. We do okay. Yeah, we're surviving.
Is your sister younger or older?
She's older by, you know, 16, 18 months. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You're so close in age.
Close in age. Yeah. So yeah, we beat the hell out of each other as children, but we do better now.
Jonah is older than me by 26 months.
You were going to say like 26 years.
We usually say 2 years, but 20, yeah, if you want to get granular, 26 months.
That's impressive.
25 and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Clearly you're keeping close track.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a little bit of a mathematician.
So, Andrew, we were talking before we started recording. Me, you, and Vanessa recorded a podcast together in 2015.
Yes.
What do you remember about that? That feels like it was like 50 years ago.
I mean, it does. What I remember is like I'm a fan of your sister's. I mean, obviously, I'm a fan of yours now, Jonah, as well. But I remember being like, what? That's amazing. Like, I get to go talk to Vanessa Mayer. And I was super excited. I do remember her giving me like a little bit of guff, if I recall correctly, in that moment. But that I felt special in that guff. And we share a through line of having gone through, I think, the same cancer when we were younger, you know. And
yes.
So I remember being like, and I didn't know that. I think going into that podcast.
Well, you would have if you had read my email when I sent it to you, however many years ago when you were going through your
on tour and not responding to every email
instead
from a stranger,
absolutely ignoring my email. Yeah. Should we give some context? I don't completely remember exactly how this went down, but. As everyone...
You definitely remember more than anyone else on this conversation.
Everyone, I've talked about it many times. I have a show. When I was 15, I had leukemia. I'm doing great now, but I was treated for a couple years. And then I guess, I don't know. I remember reading an article in a magazine about you, Andrew, or something about you being... How old were you?
I was 22. So yeah,
you were 22.
Yeah, yeah. And that was like 2005. Yeah, and so I was kind of in between my first two projects. It was in between Something Corporate and Jack's Mannequin at that point when I found out I was sick.
Yeah, and so I think I must have read about you. Maybe did some interview or something in a magazine.
Well, Vanessa, I was working at Alternative Press, so maybe
probably was Alternative Press. Yeah,
I was about to say. Well, if it was a magazine, it was probably Alternative Press, because I'm pretty sure that's the only magazine that's ever written about my career to this day.
But I felt like we wrote about your career a lot.
Yeah.
I'm also pretty sure, like, I wasn't reading it. I was more reading, like, you know, YM and 17 than I was, like, all the music magazines. So that's probably...
There's actually a pretty good chance that at that point... Like I think cancer actually made me more famous than my music did. And so I think there's a chance that there were some teen magazines that were like,
I was going to say, maybe I did actually read it in like 17 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. My publicist was working overtime at that moment, I think.
Yeah. As you know, as they should.
Yeah.
And I must have gotten your email address, because I was like, there's no way your email address was in that article. So I must have gotten it from Jonah.
I think, and my email address at that point was probably something very offensive at AOL.com.
Yeah. So I like emailed you to say, probably I'm Jonah's sister. I had leukemia, you know, let's see, 2005. So I was sick in like 97 to like 99. Okay. So like, or I was treated from 97 to 99. So I probably was like, you know, I had leukemia 5 years ago. And, you know, if you need anything or you want someone to talk to you about what it's like or whatever, like, please reach out. I'd be happy to talk or be of help in any way. Probably something to that effect. And yeah, and the response I got was goose egg, zero, nada. Now,
so,
yeah.
So just so you're aware, like my, I mean, even if you look at like me on social media now, it's like my connection to the digital sphere, like from the from a very young age, has been virtually nothing. But I think that married with the fact that I was like, anytime somebody reached out to me, they're like, I had cancer too. I was like, yeah. I definitely am not going to talk to that person. Like,
yeah.
Like, I was like, I had this, which is the worst thing, by the way, if anybody who's gone through this is listening, like, it took me probably 5 or 6 years before I actually like started making cancer friends. You know what I mean?
And, yes. And, yeah.
Which changed my life. It actually made my life so much better. And if I had done that, I think I would have circumvented like maybe 5 or 6 years of like really bad coping skills. And I think that's probably why you reached out to me. You're like, I'm going to help this guy not do the dumb thing that everybody does. But I was like, no, I'm just going to actually just drink a bottle of something every day for the next few years until I figure it out.
I probably reached out to you because I genuinely wanted to help, but also because I thought you were a cool music person. This was my in. Just to be like, if we're putting everything on the table. And also, I just want to say, if I were you, as much as I'm razzing you, like I razzed Jonah on Twitter, if I were you and I was going through this thing and this absolute stranger had like gotten my email and was like, if you need anything, you're like, actually, I'd love to talk to people I know or had one conversation with in the past. And I also want to say your instinct to not want to like fully sort of group yourself in with other people who have cancer gave me such a visceral memory of when I was first diagnosed. I remember they, and I mean this in such a, I mean this in a way that I was like very naive. Yeah. I don't think this was the right reaction or whatever, but I remember like I would always go to overnight camp. And then I remember when I was diagnosed, they were like, you can go to this overnight camp where everyone has cancer. And like, they gave me the brochure and there's all these kids with like no hair. And it's like, don't you want to go to this camp? And I was like,
no.
Absolutely not. And I was like, I just didn't want to be like, you know, you just, especially when it's new, you don't want to be it to be your identity. And so it feels, I think, like if you then are like, I'm all in, I'm gonna like just like be talking to only people who have this, it's like it makes it even harder because you're already trying to accept the personal part of like being someone with an illness that you don't want to be like, oh, but now I have to change all my friends and everything too.
Dude, for a short time, I remember they started like parading people into my hospital room. They're like, here's somebody who's gone through this too. And I was just like, can you please not send another person in here that was like young with cancer? Like, thank you. Like again, now I see the error in my ways for sure.
Right,
because it really did. I feel like once I finally like had a little bit more space and then was able to talk to people, it was like it was very helpful. But again, like the things that, you know, when you're 22, like you're not in the habit of making great decisions in general.
No, but you know? I also feel like you probably weren't ready for that. You had to be, like, I remember talking to people who had been sick once I was sort of more ready to do that. But before that, I sort of just wanted to talk to my same friends and talk about like the gossip that was going on at school and dumb teenage stuff. That was the stuff that made me feel normal, was to not be like constantly talking to other people who had cancer about cancer, you know? And speaking of which, Jonah, welcome to the club.
Yeah.
Did you know this, Andrew?
So Andrew, you probably don't know this. I was diagnosed with leukemia in 2019. So just a couple years ago, just like maybe
different kind.
Okay. No, quickly, you're not serious right now, are you?
Yeah. Yeah, I am, but not ALL. It's called HCL. So it's hairy cell leukemia. So it's this very rare leukemia. There's less than 1,000 cases a year or something like that. And so, you know, I did chemo. I'm doing a lot better, but I'm realizing as you two are talking that I actually pulled like a Vanessa move recently. And
you did?
Yes.
By the way, Jonah's doing great. I want everyone listening to know that Jonah's doing great. He had a week of treatment. He's doing much. Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm sorry. I had no idea that you'd gone through that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. It's fine. But yeah, so we've all had leukemia and
welcome to the club, dude.
What a club.
The type, and not to be a downer, but yeah, the type I have is like super rare, not you know, and so I read that the guitar player in Sebastian Bach from Skid Row's band was diagnosed with HCL with this.
What?
Yes. Yeah. And you know, I watch a lot of live music on YouTube. I don't go to a lot of shows, but if a band I'm even tangentially interested in has a live concert on YouTube, I've probably watched it or watched clips from it. And so I kind of recognize this guy, and I know their publicist, I emailed. I was like, hey, it's Jonah. Like, I saw this guy has HCL. Like, I have it. It's very rare. Like, if he ever wants to talk. He was like, okay, thank you. Never heard it.
Right.
Nothing.
And is it like a worse feeling than when you reach out to like somebody just that you like? If you're like, you're like trying to be like a cancer brother and you get crickets, is it like really F you at that point? I mean, Vanessa, I mean, obviously you've carried this for a long time for me that you hate me clearly because of what happened. But how did it feel for you, Jonah? I'm curious.
Yeah, it stung a little. I mean, I kind of, but you know, it's sort of to your point, I mean, I guess in this analogy, that would be you. Yeah. You know, I get it. People aren't ready. And I've actually done some kind of like online things with talking to other people with my type of leukemia. And it is kind of like, it can be kind of a bummer. And so I get it. I just felt like I was kind of framing as like, oh, I'm this cool guy who worked in music. Like, you're in this band with a guy from Skid Row. Like, I think like Vanessa, like we should be friends. Like our ulterior motive. I'm not just reaching out to random people, but yeah, I guess part of me kind of expected a reply, but I didn't have a lot of stock in it, so it's fine. I haven't really thought about it till you two start talking. I was like, oh, I did the same thing, but like a couple years ago, not when I was like 20.
Well, the other thing though, in your defense, Jonah, is that the thing that you had is super rare. Like, it is pretty crazy that you guys both, whereas like what Andrew and I had, you know, I'm not trying to diminish it, but also it's like one of the most common childhood cancers, you know, of all time. It's like I was, you know, and the number of times that I said I'm Jonah's sister when I was in my teens, early 20s, and tried to get something out of that. You know, I couldn't even tell you. It's just millions of times.
And I also absolutely would have punished this guy and asked him about the solo and 18 in Life and what kind of guitar is he you. I mean, he would have had to answer a lot of like musical questions he didn't sign up for.
Jonah, I think this is the time for the follow-up based on what you said previously. Like, I can tell you're clearly not ready for this, but I wanted to follow up and just like let you know I'm still here.
Yeah,
maybe just do it once a week until you just like
yeah.
And I just want to underline, like, Andrew, as much as again I love to make fun of this, I do think that there is like, it's not that you were making the wrong decision when you didn't email me back. I mean, questionable, but like it's that you weren't ready to have that conversation. And by the way, you weren't ready to have it with a complete stranger. Like, maybe you were ready to have it with a non-complete stranger. But I will say, those kinds of talks, like, I feel like if you're ready for them, they're great. If you're not, because it reminded me too that I went to this focus group or something for at the hospital I was treated at in Cleveland with other people who were young adults, like when we were all maybe in our early 20s. And it was so interesting for me to hear about how all of us were kind of managing being adults after having this thing that was very kind of sort of made us revert kind of in our development when we were teenagers. And so it, to me, it was like a very uplifting thing, because I was like, wow, I'm not the only one who feels this way about these things. But before that, you know, for example, when I was asked to go to this overnight camp, I was like, take your brochure and put it back on the stack.
So just so you know, I think there's a really good chance I never even read the email.
I know. You know,
like,
what?
No, and but, I like, think- but only because I probably wasn't even reading email. Like, I want to be able to get back into my old email address just to research whether or not.
I think I tried. I'm having flashbacks now of trying to find it before we did the Going Off Track podcast in 2015 and not finding it,
which is so disappointing, because I really want to know what it said.
It's probably so clear that I just think you're cool. And also as a side note, willing to give you advice.
If you find it, I'm definitely gonna frame it and put it in my living room.
That's really nice. Well, I'll be on the lookout.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Well, I'm glad we resolved that. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back with Andrew McNabb.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we're back. So, Andrew, you know, we wanted to get into our topic a little bit today. And I remember when you were on Going Off Track in 2015, we talked about piano a lot. We talked a lot about Bruce Hornsby, if you remember.
Yes, big fan.
We talked about, I think, you watching maybe the Mandolin Rain video and kind of picking up some moves.
That sounds about right. Yeah, I'm a big fan of like his. We've talked about this, but there are a handful of Bruce Hornsby moves that have informed my playing eternally. Like, you know, I stole like one, and that's pretty much my only trick.
Well, you know, what I think is really interesting about you is, you know, we didn't really know each other very well, but I worked for AP and I was on the Warped Tour from, you know, 02, I don't know, maybe 03, 04. And I think Something Corporate was on because I remember you would come out with this piano covered in stickers.
Yeah. It's literally over my shoulder right here. It's
you have it still?
Yeah. It's what I write on still to this day. Yeah.
Incredible. You still write on it?
Yeah. Yeah. I've used it for, every record for the last, 10 or 15 years. Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. Cause I remember we did the programs. And so I remember it was like, they had to get this piano off the truck, like all this stuff, wheel it on the stage, with very short changeovers. Like, and you know, I always thought I was like, oh, Andrew's like making piano cool. Cause it's like, you guys were on this kind of punk label, this punk festival, you had this piano covered in stickers, but it was like a piano, which isn't traditionally considered like, quote unquote, it's an instrument we're all kind of forced to play as kids or used to be. I mean, what was it like? Was it hard to make piano cool or was that natural or what was that like?
And just to clarify, I just want to jump in and say our topic for today is taking piano lessons as a kid.
Just to
center it. But go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, being cool was something I was never very good at. So that is always like a funny concept to me. Even when Drive Thru signed Something Corporate, like I was so confused. Like we were, you know, you mentioned Bruce Hornsby. I was listening to like Ben Folds Five, Semisonic, like, you know what I mean? Like the bands I was listening to in high school, Travis, you know? And so when a punk label approached us, I was like, dude, we can't tour with punk bands. Like, no, that's not going to work. And then I just underestimated that scene's sort of willingness to sort of wrap their arms around what we did. But yeah, it was hard. I mean, carrying a piano around on tour when you're touring in a van, you know, it's a 500-pound instrument, you know, that we, you know, we didn't know how to tune it. We didn't know how to do any of that. And we would just tow it onto stages and try and figure out ways to make it to mic it with all these loud instruments around it. You know, it was a real trial and error thing. But that Warped Tour that you're mentioning was really weirdly like the arrival of something corporate in that scene, which I'm still to this day kind of shocked that they took us in.
Yeah. And I think, so I'm sure, you know, throughout the years, people were like, just bring a keyboard.
Oh my God, dude. If you knew how many angry sound men in nightclubs where we were playing to like four or five people were just like, yeah, kid, why don't you go ahead and get a keyboard? You know, and we put up with it though, because honestly, I think it circumvented our ascent in a huge way because we had the sort of nerve to show up with this piano. It forced people to listen. Even when we were playing with bands that didn't sound anything like us, they were like, wow, that was gutsy. And we were remembered for it. And I think that helped a lot.
Yeah. Wow.
I still have people say that to me, though, the keyboard thing, even to this day. I mean, it still happens.
Like you've never thought of that.
Yeah, you're like, thank you. I really appreciate it. I can't jump on a keyboard and have it work for me later.
You know, Jonah and I both took piano lessons as kids. If I recall, I stuck with it a little bit longer. But the thing that I remember was like I had several different piano teachers. Jonah, I don't know how many you went through, but I remember all of them, and I remember like liking some more than others. When did you start playing piano, and did you stick with the same piano teacher the whole time?
Okay, so my parents started my sister and I in piano lessons when I think I was 6 and she was 7.
Okay.
I made it through like 3 lessons. Okay. And I liked the piano. Like I had already kind of started like sitting down at the piano and being into it. This promptly killed my love of the piano for about, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years. Like I did two or three lessons. My sister, like ever the academic and well-studied, she killed it. And so she kept doing it for maybe a year or so. And then, but I was out. So that was like first grade. And then in the fourth grade is when I found my way to the piano on my own and started writing songs. A friend's dad taught me how to play like a chord on the piano. And I was like, it unlocked everything. I was like, oh my God. Like, and so I started writing songs for like a year. And then weirdly, and I still to this day can't figure out the why and how, like, but I kind of hit a roadblock. I couldn't write any more songs with the one chord that I had been taught and with like just the experimenting I was doing. And so I asked my parents if they would get me piano lessons when I was in fifth grade. So this is, I lived in Columbus. So I actually, you guys grew up in Ohio,
Cleveland.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cleveland, so, yep.
This is the year I moved to Columbus. And so they got me piano lessons at Capital University in Columbus, and it was with this German woman named Beatrice Eisringenhausen. And I mean, I studied with her for 3 years, and she hated me for every single minute of ever. I mean, that's my perception of it. You know, like, I don't even remember. Nobody asked me to go. My parents didn't care if I took piano lessons. I asked them for it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think I knew I had to. Like, I even at like what I was 10 or 11, I was just like,
yeah,
I knew I had to do it, but I hated it. I mean, I hated
it. Yeah. It sounds like your teacher probably did this to you. The thing that I found to be the most annoying as a kid about piano teachers is the level of guilt that they lay on you if you didn't practice in between lessons. And you're like, listen, lady, I got a lot going on. I'm a kid. I have to play with my friends. I have maybe a little bit of homework because I'm not old enough to have like a lot of homework, but I do have a little bit of homework. And I have to watch TV. And like, I need you to understand that practicing piano every day, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah. It's like going to the dentist as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like the level of, they'd be like, you know, you should be practicing for like an hour a day or something. And you're like, in your dreams. Now, I will say, I have friends who did do that. Specifically, I want to give a shout out to Sasha Ross and Steph Rue, who their senior project was like composing a beautiful piano like piece that was like their whole 2 month thing, was like coming up with this whole thing. And they practiced, they were both so good at piano. Oh no, wait, I'm sorry. Steph was playing oboe, Sasha was playing piano. But anyways, they like practiced this whole thing and they were so into practicing their instruments every day. Whereas just like, I don't know, I didn't have it. And I was, especially this one teacher I had, who her foyer was like full of, everything was owls. It was like owl, it was like owl decorations everywhere and every, just so much owl stuff in a way that you were like, something's going on here. But I remember I'd go into her basement and she would just give me so much shit about not practicing. And it just, I don't know. Anyway, sorry, I've gone on a rant. But well, Vanessa, that was to me the worst part.
I don't know if you know even know this. I took piano lessons at our high school as an adult.
what?
You like, did?
Like in my 20s, like when I was in college or something, I like was taking music theory and I was terrible at it. And they let me borrow an upright bass for a summer. This was like, I was full on like in my 20s, like went back to like the middle school or something. And
this sounds like a recurring nightmare. No.
And I went back and took lessons for like, I was home for a summer. I don't know why. And
did you see teachers that you recognized?
No, it was like after school and I would just go in there and I would get, I took
and it was at Pepper Pike or Brady.
It was at Brady.
Did you have the mustache at the time though? That's what I want to know, because I sadly did not
have the mustache. And I have a vague memory, but yeah, they gave me an upright bass for a summer. I took private lessons and then I returned it at the end of the summer. And then I took some kind of piano lesson because I was like learning more about, I was taking classical guitar and stuff and I wanted to learn. And I like, I don't know how it happened, but I remember being like in our school as like an adult being like,
elementary school.
It was 5th through 7th grade. I think that school.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
that must have been so strange, Jonah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
A weird feeling.
It was a weird feeling. But I remember taking as a kid, maybe at the school too. I think we also took it at the school, maybe a different school, but in the same school system. But
yeah, right.
But yeah, I don't think I really liked practicing that much either. And Andrew, it sounds like, you know, it worked for you because you were kind of writing your own material, not just like playing like When the Saints Go Marching in over and over.
Yeah, so like I always play. I mean, I played from the time I got home from school until the time I went to bed every day. But I that was all I did, you know, was play piano and write songs from the time I was 9 until, you know, till now. But I couldn't convince myself still to practice this material most of the time. And so like I was the classic, like I would go in and I'd ask her to play it for me and then I'd try and memorize how she played it, and like that was how I did most of my schooling with the teacher. Was like I would just study her hands and try and memorize how she played these pieces, and then I also started, you know, like when she started putting me in recitals, I kind of insisted that I would be allowed to learn, you know, like a modern piece, so something that I wanted to learn, you know, because she just wanted to teach me classical music. And I wrote about this in the book I put out, but like there was a recital where I think I had to learn the minuet in G, but then I made her teach me November Rain.
Like, nice.
Oh my God.
And like I played all of November Rain at the recital. You know what I mean? Like, I think the song is like 8 minutes, you know, it was just like, dun, 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 dun. And I'm just like, in my mind, I'm Axl Rose with the bandana, you know, and like, there's maybe 20 people spread out through like some like, you know, mid-level college conservatory. And I'm just like, dude, and I probably was singing the song under my breath too.
Oh my God. That's so great. Well, I remember too, like, I remember getting a music book of like piano songs that had really cool, like that's all I wanted was to get the piano book that had cool songs. And I remember I got a book that had, it had like a lot of CNC Music Factory and like Gloria Estefan songs. Yeah, I think I'm trying to think of like the biggest CNC Music Factory.
It would, is it get up on the dance floor?
Get gonna make you sweat or, yeah. or things that make you go, hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
Yeah, like there were some really big CNC Music Factory songs and just like songs that like when you play them on a piano, something gets like a little lost in translation, especially if you're like a 10-year-old kid and your skills are not as, you know, honed.
Right. Well, yeah. I took guitar lessons, you know, and I did that every week and my teacher would transcribe it. And I actually have this, I put this on the Rob Harville episode, I have this Alice in Chains facelift tab book from when I was a kid.
Wow.
And we talked about tab books, but yeah, Andrew, did they, because it's like now kids have it so easy, right? Like they can watch on YouTube someone playing it. Yeah, they can look up the tabs for free. You had to save up all this money to buy these tabs that were like usually wrong.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, it's so much easier to learn how to do stuff now in general.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I remember like going and buying sheet music for like, you know, River of Dreams by Billy Joel. And like, sure. You know what I mean? Like this stuff that I was like getting into as a kid, I was like, oh man, I could get the sheet music, you know? but yeah, I mean, yeah, that's how cool I was, you guys. Just me hanging out at home with my River of Dreams. But yeah, I mean, but my teacher never let me. I mean, other than like once every recital, I could learn one piece. Otherwise, it was just like, you know, it was all classical, which now, of course, I would super appreciate like learning that. But, like my daughter's taking piano lessons now. And I swear to God, I had PTSD at her lesson yesterday because she pulled out a theory book that I swear to God I had when I was like a little older than she was. And I was just like, oh my God, this is like kind of triggering me, you know? Like,
yeah, our mom signed us up with someone. Then we went to Pepper Pike or somewhere to take our lessons. Our very first one was when we were little. And we had this young guy that our mom thought was really cool and really smart. And he let us skip theory. We never took really? Music theory.
Yeah. And
we
then I tried to take it later in life and I had no idea what I was doing. And I wish I had learned it.
Well, dude, my best teacher was my high school, like he was like the high school choir director, you know? And like we had like a little performing arts school, which I was in for a minute, but it was really just this music teacher that I really dug. And I ended up, he liked me and he knew I was gonna, he could just tell I actually cared. Where probably half the kids he taught were just like, you know, he was kind of a trolley sort of dude. And so my sister I think it was my whole sophomore year, she had to drive me to school and she had a zero period class and I didn't have one. So I actually just audited his music theory class. I never actually attended because I was horrible with homework. I hated it. But he gave me my music theory class in my sophomore year of high school. Like a bunch of the stuff that I just tried not to learn. This like high school teacher just like took me under his wing. He's like, you don't have to do any of the tests. You don't have just come hang out and I'll teach you all this stuff.
A cool teacher.
Super
now,
cool.
Can I ask you, if you had to explain to our audience than us, but in a kind of brief way, what you learn in music theory, if you had to give us a quick lesson, what would that...
Dude, I mean, it's been so long since I've actually done it that I probably wouldn't describe it well. But I think it's... You know, outside of just the actual learning the performance of the instrument, right? It's just understanding the threads of what you're learning about, right? You know, the way that keys and things interact with each other and the relationship between majors and minors and sort of, you know, the broad strokes that you don't even necessarily need to play an instrument to understand. I mean, there are things like circle of fifths and all these, you know, these topics that I couldn't even teach myself at this point, you know, but it's just how to understand music and the way that, you know, the way that it sort of maps out, you know, in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Andrew, was it big for you this year when Dream Theater won a Grammy?
Huge. I mean, no, I'm just kidding.
I reached out on Twitter a couple days ago. Everyone who didn't unfollow me after the turkey sandwich thing might have seen this. And I said, you know, do people still take piano lessons? And I got some replies. And it seems like some do, but the consensus is it's not a thing like it was when we were kids. Like it's
really?
Kids do. Yeah. Like some people said they do or like, but they said there's just so many other types of lessons now and so many more things available that I think piano and it being expensive and hard to move, like it's just not, I feel like it's not the same as it was when we were kids. It's just different.
I mean, I believe that but I will say, like, my daughter and like all her friends, they all go to, well, not all of them, but a big bunch of them all go to this same piano teacher, Miss Juliet. And like, they love her and she's great. Like, I go with her now. It's a kind of a fun thing for me because all the stuff I didn't want to learn when I was her age, like, this teacher's doing a really good job of teaching her, and I'm kind of taking piano lessons all over again with Miss Juliet, you know, like, because I have to go learn.
Yeah.
I have to go learn, yeah, Cecilia's pieces now. And there have been like these things where I'm like, find myself on my phone, like looking up the most elementary, like, sight reading things, because I'm just like, oh my God, I don't even remember how to do any of this. But she's got like a little crew of friends who are taking piano lessons. But again, they're
That's
like,
great.
They're like 8, 9 years old. So I, you know, maybe it gets a little, you know, maybe that drops off at some point.
Well, I wonder too, if there's also like something in the opposite way that now there's all this internet stuff, like, right, you could write a song on a piano or do something and you could put yourself, you can show it off in a different way than like the only time you're playing is like in your teacher's house or whatever, you know, like you, right, can kind of, I don't exactly know what I'm saying, but do you guys understand what I'm saying? There's more like young internet sensations. And as a person who, I'm coming from the POV of someone who's always loved attention and like being, yep, a performer, like you could be like, I want to play piano. Like there's all these, you know, young people playing piano and then putting a video of themselves playing piano online. And then they're, you know, Justin Bieber.
As you say,
is that
this,
how it works?
As you say this, I'm thinking to myself, like, of all of the horrifying content that I would have created as a child if I were born literally like 15 years later, like it would be, there would just be so many pictures of a very heavy young Andrew humiliating himself on the internet if that was accessible to me at the time, you know.
Oh my gosh, it'd be like, oh, I really like this band, something corporate. Did you see the singer playing November Rain?
Oh, I mean, 100%. And I would have been wearing the bandana, like, I mean, the scene would have been, it would have been ugly to say the least. Oh, yeah.
So Andrew, what age did you stop? Do you think you stopped taking lessons? Obviously, once you started the band, you're touring. Like, at what point were you like, I think I got this?
Well, so I stopped taking formal lessons like when I was about, I don't know, maybe 12. Like I took about 3-ish years of classical. And then once I got back into high school, that teacher, Mr. Woods, he sort of was my de facto music teacher. It wasn't like, there was nothing, we didn't have a formal arrangement, but he was the first guy, I think we talked about this probably on our last talk years ago. He was the guy who taught me what a fake book was and how to read charts and really sort of prepped me for.
What is a fake book?
It's essentially
like standards.
Yeah, so like you'll get books that, yeah, and instead of like the proper sheet music, which it'll have some of that, but it'll also have like just the chord progression and the melody on the right hand so that you could fake your way through it.
Got it.
You
got
know?
It. Okay.
And so he taught me all that stuff and he gave me a pretty good background in theory. And by the time I was at, out of high school, I didn't really take any formal lessons. I sat with, I had like a really cool, like one-off lesson with Bowie's piano player, which was really cool.
Wow.
I've done like, you know, and a handful of like really great piano players that I've been lucky enough to be on tour with, you know, Ben from Jukebox the Ghost. I like, you know, he would show me a thing or two when we were on tour together. But you know, I'm mostly self-taught and not very proud in that sense either. You know, I've always like joked that it was the vehicle to writing songs for me more than it was like an expression of like me trying to, you know, be, I've never really been trying to be the best piano player. It's more like I've been trying to pass while I use it to write the best songs I can, if that makes sense.
Have you reconnected at all with this piano teacher that let you audit his class and stuff?
I mean, I had, he's since passed, but gotcha. we, but, uh, uh, you know, he brought me in years ago back to my high school to do and to do a talk for his students. And so,
oh,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
So nice.
Yeah. So we did keep in touch for a time. But yeah, it was probably now 3 or 4 years ago that he passed away.
But he must have been so proud of you that he was able to bring you, like, that he saw you have such success.
Yeah.
That's must have been so gratifying for him.
I mean, I hope so. You know, he was, the thing I loved about the dude the most was just that he was like a hysterical, like kind of trolly mean to a certain group of students.
Yeah.
And then otherwise you would get this like very warm, like he really cared, you know, cause if you were somebody who really loved music, he was like, okay, I'll shine my light in this direction, you know?
And I even
went back to him when I was on tour after, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years on tour with something corporate to just check out my voice and make sure I was singing all right. You know what I mean? Like, cause I was worried.
Yeah.
Like, am I going to, you know, I want to make sure I never had formal voice lessons, you know, and he was the choir teacher. And I went back and I kind of sang for him. He's like, yeah, you're fine. Don't worry about it. He's like, you're doing good. And I think that in and of itself was like the actual, like, you know, I relaxed at that point cause I was so stressed out. I was going to like kill my voice because I had seen so many people do it on tour. And then as soon as he told me that, I was like, oh, I guess I can stay up all night and, you know, party and still do my show at the end of the day. It's like, it's gonna be fine.
That's
yeah.
a good thing to learn about yourself.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, just what every high school teacher wants to teach one of their students. Oh, why did he come here? He's just hoping he can stay up later than he usually does.
Well, we're gonna take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back with Andrew. And more, absolutely more fun.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we're back. So, Andrew, we're going to play a quick game with you. I don't even know where to start with this one. We have a very, very popular segment on this show called CEO Takedown.
Very popular. CEO Takedown.
And so it's all about taking down CEOs who are putting profits before people. And we thought, you know, since, you know, you're from something corporate, we thought we'd do kind of a special edition, the CEO Takedown Something Corporate Edition, where you give 3 examples of corporate behavior to see which one of these companies puts profits before people the most. Which is not an easy task.
This is terrifying. I mean the games scare me so much. I'm not that witty, but I'm gonna really try.
This is
for
very
you guys.
Very low stakes.
Okay, sounds good.
Basically, we're gonna read these three articles and say which corporation, you know, is the worst. I can kick us off because I've done all the research for this and spent way too much time on it. Andrew, are you familiar with the controversy happening right now between OK Go and Post Foods over their instant cereal cups?
Absolutely not.
Okay. You're busy having like a full life.
The band OK Go?
Yeah. So this is kind of a long story, but let me think of like the less convoluted. So Post Foods, they started selling these instant cereal cups and they're calling them OK Go. And according to Billboard, the band was threatening to sue Post Foods. And so the company Post went to try to get a declaratory judge ruling saying they haven't done anything wrong, you know, stating that their application was applied in 2022. So basically, OK Go said in the statement to Billboard, a big corporation chose to steal the name of our band to market disposable plastic cups of sugar to children. That was an unwelcome surprise, to say the least. But then they sue us about it. Presumably, the idea is they can just bully us out of our own name since they have so much more power to spend on lawyers. I guess that's often how it works, but hopefully we'll be the exception. And according to the lawsuit, OK Go's lawyer sent a cease and desist to Post Foods, saying the name would be sort of confusing. You know, as you know, OK Go has worked with Sony, Mercedes, all these big companies.
Yeah.
And this is one of the wildest parts, which I didn't realize. OK Go collaborated with Post Foods on some promo videos for Honey Bunches of Oats in 2011.
Whoa.
And the lawyer, of course, from Post, you know, was like, it's been so long. That was over a decade ago. There weren't not a lot of people watched that ad. And so, yeah, basically Post is kind of trying to preemptively sue OK Go so they don't go after them over the name. I mean, Andrew, let me ask you this. You're walking down the grocery store, you see these instant cereal. If you see OK Go on a product, would you think the band would be in some way affiliated?
Whether I think the band would be affiliated or not, I definitely think they have every right to go after those guys. I mean, there's no question. I mean, it would take anybody 2 seconds to type OK Go into their computer, which no question Post Foods did before they named this product. And they made a decision without question to be like, that band's not big enough to cause a problem for us. Like there's no way that any major company doesn't type the name of a product in before they decide to slap a label on it. And there's no way that somebody didn't see it and make the choice. So I say down with those guys.
Yes.
Although you're going to give me two other options. So
this one's going to be tough to beat though. I agree. I mean, to me, the most wild part is Post is preemptively suing OK Go for what, like
for having the name they stole they stole.
They tried to settle with OK Go as a good faith effort for a brand quote branding collaboration co-marketing arrangement, but the band rejected the offer without providing a counter proposal and made a clear threat of potential litigation. So I think Post thought, oh, we'll throw them a couple hundred grand, they'll take it, we'll sell our Fruity Pebbles. Nope. OK Go, not taking it. And this honestly gives me a lot of respect for OK Go. I think it's a really, really cool move.
Those guys have always been so creative and so interesting. And like all their videos are next level. Like, yeah, I'm rooting for those dudes. Take them down. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, Vanessa, what are your thoughts?
A band's name, especially when it's an established band like OK Go, like that's what they have. Like they can't just change their name. It would be so confusing for all of their fans and everyone.
Well, and plug anything else into that, right? Like call your cereal is called Led Zeppelin now,
right?
You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Totally. And as someone who on my show, like we had lawyers, and I'm sure not as many lawyers as Post does, but Showtime has lawyers that would find stuff for us, like. We couldn't use someone's like first and last name if the person existed and we were like portraying like if that name existed and that, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like there were so many products and things that were flagged for us. There's absolutely no way Post doesn't have a billion lawyers as you can see by the way that they're countersuing or whatever. Like they obviously have a huge
defense. I think Andrew's right. I think they underestimated the band.
They underestimated the band.
Classic corporate mistake.
Classic corporate mistake.
It's just like rename your product. Get over it. Move on.
Rename your product. Right.
Also,
exactly.
I don't go, oh, okay, go. That makes me feel like I got to buy that. That sounds delicious.
Well, what it is, if you look at it, it's just a little bowl of fruity pebbles with, like, you add cold water and it makes it into milk. It's like, it's just fruity pebbles. It's just like, okay, go is like the packaging.
Yeah.
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 I gotta side with, I mean, I feel like this is a very egregious one, knowing that we have two others.
And a couple
to
people sent
about.
This to me. You know, I feel like people are seeing this and they're thinking of this podcast.
Wow.
So
yeah,
that's big.
Yeah, that's
Vanessa,
big.
Would you like to get into the next one?
Sure. So the next one was recently made into a documentary, I believe by Netflix. And it's based on this thing that happened in 1995 where Pepsi put out an ad that you could get, if you got, I think it was 100,000 or some crazy number of Pepsi points from buying Pepsi products, you would win this big fighter jet.
A Harrier jet for 7 million points.
A Harrier jet for 7 million points. And basically, they didn't think anyone would get the 7 million points and that anyone would really, like, want a Harrier jet. But there's this whole documentary about how they, like, did this whole... It was this huge ad campaign and they, like, wanted to show kind of like a kid flying this jet and make it be this whole thing where, like, every kid and every adult thought, like, that could be me. And then they'd buy a lot of Pepsi products and then they would never get that many points, but they would get enough points for this, let's call it what it is, scam to work. So somebody did it. They got all the points and then they asked for the jet. And basically it became this whole law.
Not like, unlike this post food situation. Like, I feel like they tried to countersue. It became this drawn out legal thing where they, oh, well, obviously this is
settle.
A joke. And the people were like, well, it says here, this is, and the documentary is actually really interesting. We don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, but it's kind of similar to this story, a company kind of making a promise, doing a promotion, and then when someone actually steps up and does it, all of a sudden they change the rules, they bring in their lawyers. Typical.
Yeah, yeah.
Andrew,
yeah.
What are your thoughts on, were you familiar with this? The documentary is called Pepsi, Where's My Jet?
Yeah, so I think I started this documentary while drinking a cocktail and maybe passed out. So for me, this sort of, like, if I saw the ad for the Harrier jet, mm-hmm. win the Pepsi, I think there's like a moment where I sort of, you have to step off and say, like, do you really want to buy that much Pepsi anyway? You know, like, and mm-hmm. do you really believe it? I don't know. I mean, I think it's dumb. And I hate to say, I think that anybody who actually aspired to the Harrier jet and purchased the thing, I'm like, I sort of have like a ghetto life kind of.
Well, I think, and I don't know if this will change. I don't know if this will change your opinion. I don't want to give too much away, okay. But I do believe they figured out a way where in the fine print you could buy Pepsi points or something. So they actually didn't end up buying all this Pepsi. They were like, "Here's a check for like $2 million,
way less than a Harrier jet."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A Harrier jet is worth like $20 million. I could buy 7 million points for $800,000. Here's the check. Where's the jet? Basically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I admire whoever decided to lean into this, and I'm really curious how this plays out.
Yeah.
So I might watch this.
Try rewatching it. Rewatching it maybe one night.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still more annoyed about the OK Go one.
That's
at this
fair.
Moment.
That's
yeah,
fair.
The OK Go one really feels. I definitely think Pepsi is in the wrong here, and I
totally, of course.
But I hear what you're saying. But the OK Go one, it wasn't even. They weren't even trying to enter into anything initially. Right. They were just living their lives as OK Go, and Post was like infringing on them. Like, that's...
Well, the Harrier jet folks, like on the other side, they were kind of like, I mean, I could be wrong, but it seems like they were looking for a fight. They probably knew that nobody was planning on delivering anybody a Harrier jet, but they were like,
right.
Okay, maybe I'm going to just try and push this. Because it seems like the legalese is gonna play out in my favor, and so it's kind of like two dueling and somewhat intelligent factions trying to figure each other out. Whereas the OK Go, they're just getting robbed of their intellectual property. In my mind,
no, I think that's accurate. The last one. This is A&W puts pants on its quote unquote polarizing bear mascot in joke statement made at M&M's expense. So. You know, just, I know this is a lot, it's a big headline. This is Como News.
Okay.
So, you know, just to give a little backstory, you know, there's M&M's made this announcement. They're replacing its spokes candies.
We're not talking about M&M the rapper. We're talking about M&M's the candy.
Yeah, okay. Candy.
So they recently, you know, made a statement they were going to replace their spokes candies for being polarizing. And so, you know,
because they don't have pants on, they're polarizing because they don't have pants. Why are they polarizing?
I think it has to do with like conservatives, like saying like they're like too woke or something. I don't watch enough of this.
The shit that people care about is so shocking to me.
Tucker Carlson.
It has to do something to do with Tucker Carlson is offended by these M&Ms. I don't know the full story. That's not even what this story is about. This story is kind of a response to that. So that's gotten a lot of attention. And then as soon as this happens, A&W jumps in. And
the root beer company
okay,
they release a statement like in the same font and stuff saying that Rudy the great root beer, which is like a bear in an A&W sweater, they're saying his lack of pants can be polarizing, therefore we've decided Rudy will wear jeans going forward, not to worry, he'll remain our official spokes bear, after all he is unbearably cute and impossible to replace. So basically they kind of like tried to jump on this M&M attention by being like, look, we have a mascot too, like trying to kind of get attention drummed up for A&W, which, like, let's face it, no one cares about A&W. So
to my best friend Adam really likes,
okay,
A&W,
well,
root beer.
Jonah, you do too.
Yeah, okay. I like it, but I like root beer. I'm not like, and you know what, to be honest,
you're not,
if you look
A&W
at the ingredients, A&W probably isn't even root beer. I mean, it's probably like,
wow,
it's probably like flavored, like,
now who's gonna get taken down? Yeah.
Well,
you guys are in big
trouble. Root beer,
well,
though?
I think,
is it,
you know,
is
if
it
you,
from
if,
a root beer plant?
No, but I think if you got like
from
like Virgil's or like one of these higher end root beers, like I think it would be more legit than like an A&W, in my opinion. I don't know. Maybe even an IBC.
Yes. Sure.
Sioux City sarsaparilla.
Well, yes.
It also seems like they, you know, M&Ms have these iconic M&Ms that were their spokespeople, and
spokes
now
candies.
Maya Rudolph, spokes candy, and now Maya Rudolph is the spokesperson. And so that's like a shift that they made because they were getting some kind of, you know, criticism and whatever. And I don't know, I'm not super knowledgeable about how long this has been going on or what mainly Tucker Carlson's biggest issue is with this. But they made this announcement about how they were switching, that they have a new spokesperson and they still love the spokes candies.
But this is
like what they're doing now. And then, as Jonah said, A&W released this thing about how their spokes animal, this bear, was now going to be like dressing differently. And they were kind of trying to do a satire of what M&M's was doing. But nobody knows what their nobody knows about this bear. Right. It's not like the bear is nearly as popular as the M&M's candies. So it's candy, like spokes candies. So it's just sort of like jumping on this thing. I get that they're trying to be funny, but it doesn't work because nobody knew about the bear before. So you can't.
Right.
It's
Andrew, what are your thoughts on this one? I got a feeling you're not going to have the visceral reaction you did to OK Go.
The first one really strikes close to home.
Sure. You know what I mean? Of course. So, of course.
I think I feel more sad for A&W than I. I mean, is it greed? I don't think so, as much as it's just like, oh man, we really wish our product, anybody cared about it at all.
Yeah. So, you know what it's like? So, it's like, to give an analogy, it's like a little kid going to a professional baseball game and bringing his mitt and thinking he's going to play right field. It's like,
yeah. Yeah. And I wonder, you know.
Jonah, did you think that?
It's like,
you did.
What?
When you were a kid,
no,
did you
I don't
think
know if I thought that,
bring...
but it's like, oh, you're gonna go in the big leagues. No, you're gonna take a seat in the last row. Yeah. Like, you're not quite here yet.
I think still the first one feels the most egregious to me from the corporate standpoint.
Sure.
It's like there's a real like, this is like, of all of them, that is the sort of douchiest like aggressive sort of move, I think, of anybody. You know, the Pepsi one, I think in their minds are like, nobody thinks they're going to get a Harrier jet.
Right.
They're just stupid in that case,
yeah, right?
I think, and then in this last one, I mean, I just kind of feel bad. I almost kind of want to get an A&W Bear like shirt and wear it, you know, and just be like, yo, he's here. Like we love this bear,
yeah,
you know, like I want to give him a hug.
Yeah.
You know? I
feel
he's desperately seeking attention, clearly. Yes.
And just to be clear, his name is Rudy the Great Root Beer.
Yeah, which is like, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. And also, just to say, like, I don't think when I go to a grocery store, I guess, or a convenience store, and I'm getting root beer, I guess I kind of buy whichever one is there. There usually isn't a ton of, maybe I'm not going to the right stores, but there aren't like a ton of choices.
Sure.
If A&W is there.
If it's a Barks or A&W, you're not really feeling
loyal.
Yeah,
although honestly, I'm going with Barks, right? But like, I just feel like it's not, to me, root beer is such a kind of niche thing. It sort of speaks for itself. It's not.
It's also like, this is just a big thing, and not to get too off on a tangent or wrapping up, but this is a thing corporations do now. I notice, especially on social media, like Dunkin' Donuts will post something and then like State Farm Insurance will chime in with like trying to make a joke about it. And it's just like so gross because it's like,
it's really sad.
All these people working for corporations like trying to jump on like, oh, like Dunkin' Donuts is a big following. Like, you know, and it's just like, it's never really
like
funny. It's always like, just like feels just, and it, you get this kind of Rudy feeling that Andrew's talking about where you're like, oh man, this is rough stuff.
Well, you feel like you can see the room that they're in, right? You feel like you can see they're like, I've got a great idea, you know? Like, and they like hired like a young kid who's like pitching like what they think are funny ideas. And then they probably gets like washed through a bunch of different suits before it ends up.
Yeah,
on.
acting like they're our friends.
Right,
on
right.
Social media. And they're just there to have fun with us when they're really these like billionaires. Yeah. Now I do want to, our producer Olivia did give us some clarity on the M&M's controversy, which is that Mars was criticized for the green M&M's sexy characterization. When the characters were redesigned, green not only got new shoes, but she and the brown M&M also became friendlier toward each other, showcasing a force supporting women. M&M's changes were criticized and gained widespread attention, with Tucker Carlson ridiculing the changes and TikTok users criticizing the company for feeling it needed to strip the character of her sexuality. So it's like what's that?
I like it. No, I see the note. It just says everyone was angry.
Yeah. So all sides kind of weighing in on this thing. I guess the point is, A&W found this as an opportunity to jump on board and kind of maybe try and stir up some of their own controversy in case anyone's paying attention.
And this is probably the most that it's been talked about anywhere.
Can I admit something really sad to you guys?
Please.
That occurred to me later in this conversation as you were talking about Rudy the root beer?
Yeah.
That it really didn't occur to me until just now that it was Rudy the root bear.
Oh yeah, B-E-A-R. Yeah,
you know,
honestly coming to me for the first time as well. And
I'm assuming this is the case, but like I'm a fan now. I'm gonna look him up and I'm gonna buy a t-shirt of Rudy the Root Bear. I think this is, I don't know.
Andrew,
I back him. This is my favorite company of all of them, A&W. I think this is the winner here. And
the winner is that's the winner in terms of likability, but the winner of this contest, you know, forgive me, Joan, if I'm wrong, because this is absolutely 100% your game. But I feel like the decision we have to make is which one of these companies puts profits before people the most,
worded it. And so Andrew's going with Post Foods, OK Go. Vanessa, what's your call?
Same. Post Foods, OK Go.
I'm
going
to go
Jonah?
Same here. And I just want to say to Andrew, I think your attitude towards Rudy is very, really positive.
Generous.
And really like a nice way to spin it. And I think, you know,
I'm a big fan of the underdog. That's always been my thing. I mean, it's a bear in this case.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, the under bear. Yeah, I think that's a nice way to think of it. I think, like I said, it's like that little kid at the baseball game, and like you wish him the best, but he's just not there yet. But why not give him a little encouragement? Why not give him a little encouragement? And I'm sure your friend Adam would appreciate that too, Andrew.
Totally.
And I'll say, while we're kind of supporting A&W, I also want to say the A&W root beer barrels, that candy, I believe those are by A&W. Yes. Those are delicious.
Good candies, yeah.
Really good candies.
Do you guys think there's a chance that maybe A&W is going to sign up as one of the sponsors of the show after they hear this? I feel like it's possible.
I think only if they listen all the way to the end.
Should definitely package this clip.
This wasn't like a clear... we weren't kind of supporting them the whole way.
I think we really only came around, Andrew, once you kind of reframed it for us, and now I think we're on board. we needed your reframing, so thank you for that. Yeah. And I'm sure A&W appreciates it as well.
Yeah.
As long as they weren't placating Tucker Carlson, I feel okay about it. But we can leave it at that.
Fair enough. Well, Andrew... Where can people find you? We mentioned you have a new record coming out March 31st. You have your book, Three Pianos. Where can people find out more information about you and sort of all your projects?
I mean, that's a really great question. I should know the answer, but yeah, you're already learning about my presence on social media through this conversation.
Okay, do not check Andrew's social media.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure I have a website that's like maybe myname.com. And I'm on Instagram at AMNTheWilderness, which is a really easy handle, I'm sure, to follow. I'm like really just trying to hide in plain sight if it's at all possible. But yeah, if you just look my name up, I'm sure you can figure out what I'm up to.
Great. Amazing.
Great. Well, that was really fun. Thanks so much to Andrew for joining us and to everyone for listening. If you enjoyed that, please subscribe to the podcast. Keep an eye out for next week's episode of How Did We Get Weird, where we will discuss more stories from our childhood and cultural touchstones, like taking piano lessons as a kid.
Yeah. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Andrew.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.